Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Ask the expert on the Anton Savage Show.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
And Sarah Keogh, of course, dietitian, founder of Eat Well, is the person who can answer any questions that you have about vitamins, about processed food, about ultra-processed food, about whether or not you're a celiac. You're probably not, but if you are, it's very big. All that kind of thing. Did I summarize the celiac
thing? I think so, yeah, okay. You got it in.
53106 at a cost of 30 cents, or 087-1400-106. Ultra-processed food. Let's start there, because there was a big Lancet report talking about ultra-processed food, and I think sort of telling us what we already kind of knew, which is it's very bad for you.
Well, I think it's one of those things. The ultra-processed has sort of gripped everybody's imagination at the moment. And a lot of it is what we would have traditionally called treat foods, or, you know, very negatively called junk foods. You know, if you're eating foods that are really high in salt and sugar and saturated fat, you get more heart disease and cancer and things like that. So we've known that for a really long time. And yes, we definitely need to look at ways to encourage people to eat more fresh whole foods. So, you know, looking at the marketing is going to be a big part of it, and advertising and so on. One of the issues I have is that the definition of ultra-processed foods does include some really healthy foods like whole grain bread, like yogurts, things like that. There's lots and lots of foods lumped in under the heading of ultra-processed that actually are really good for us, and that studies show actually are beneficial. So what I would say, we need to be really careful, because people are getting really worried about this. I'm meeting people who are like terrified. They're like, oh my God, I gave my child a yogurt. Are they all going to die of cancer? And you're like, no, honestly, it's fine. So we need to be a little more nuanced in how we look at it. And yes, we do need to look at, you know, as I said, encouraging those fresh whole foods, the fruit and veg, things like that, you know, maybe a little bit less of the packaged foods, but we don't need to throw them all out. And for some people, they're really important. You know, if you look at people with disabilities, things like that, being able to buy a ready-made lasagna is incredibly important in being able to live and function and so on.
Well, this is the thing that I've never fully understood about the term ultra-processed, because it isn't intrinsically bad to subject something to a process.
We see, this is it. And also, people confuse processed and ultra-processed, which are two different things. So processed, I know this is the thing. So processed is you've done something to the food. So if you take a chicken and you cook it, you have processed that chicken because you have undergone a process with it. So that's totally fine.
But in that category fits cheese, porridge, I mean, any of that kind of stuff.
Everything.
They've done things to it
once
before you get it.
Once something's been done to it, yeah, technically it's had a process. So this is the thing. People kind of hear the word and it's promoted as being a really scary thing. And everyone's like panicking about it. We don't need to. So, you know, cooking food is a process. Chopping food, you know, the argument is there. But where we look at ultra-processed is technically where it's had a lot of processing. So you might look at things that have gone through several processes maybe, and then potentially had food additives added as well. But this comes back to the idea that food additives are inherently bad for us. And again, you know, they're really well regulated, things like that. And if anything pops up that's a problem with them, they get banned quite quickly, you know, with that. So, you know, this idea that food additives are automatically bad are not accurate, you know. So if you make, I often talk about this one, if you make homemade brown soda bread, that is an ultra-processed food, because you have cooked the dough that you made, so it's gone through a process, but you added bread soda, which is an E number, E500. And usually the flour that you're buying has a couple of additives in it to help it kind of rise and work really well. So under the definition of ultra-processed food, your homemade brown soda bread, your homemade
bread
is technically an ultra-processed. Now, I know people get furious when I say that.
But people get to the point then when they go, oh, never, I mean, plague on all your houses, I'll just eat what I want.
So basically what it just, it rolls back to, please don't live on biscuits, sweets, cakes and crisps, right? This is not groundbreaking
stuff.
Don't
you come in here with your common sense.
Like, you know, your main meal, you need, you know, half your plate, your fruit and veg, get your protein in as a quarter, get your high fiber carbs in as a quarter. You're doing brilliantly. One treat a day, not six treats a day, and you'll be grand.
Text asking, does taking fish oil in capsule form help acne?
Interestingly, yes. So there's really good studies that show that the omega-3s in fish, which are EPA and DHA, reduce lesions in acne. So that would be your blackheads, your whiteheads and your spots. Now, it takes about 3 months to see an effect. So don't take it for a week and kind of go, it didn't work. But the studies actually are pretty good on it. Yeah, it really does help with acne. And if you're going to take something else as well, even primrose oil also helps.
Are you better to just eat the fish?
Always better to go food first if you can, because you get other nutrients in there. However, with the levels for acne, you'd have to be eating fish every single day, which is hard work for anybody. So I would always go with the fish oil for that.
And what are the fishes that are highest in omega-3s?
Is it salmon and mackerel would be the highest. Salmon or sardines are really high as well. And that goes for tinned or fresh. They all work.
Are there any alternative methods to ease bloating? I don't know what they mean by alternative to what?
Bloating, honestly, you could make a fortune if you could get that one fully sorted. There's loads of things. You've got to find out why you're bloated is kind of the basic one. So it can be something like irritable bowel. It can be celiac disease. It can be other issues going on. It can be a very early warning sign. And please don't panic when I say this, but it can be a warning sign of ovarian cancer. So if you have sudden bloating that does not go away at all, will you pop into your GP and get that checked? So finding out why. So it's into your doctor. Find out what the cause is. And if there's nothing sort of more serious going on, your registered dietitian. Very often it's lack of fibre. Like 60% of the time, people are just not eating enough fibre. And when you get that sorted, then you might look at other things like, you know, a low FODMAP diet. But if you're going to do a low FODMAP diet, please do it with a dietitian. It's a really fiddly diet to get right. People half do it and then go, it doesn't work. But it works quite well for a lot of people.
I was texting, I have started taking 500 milligrams of magnesium at night for sleep and anxiety. Is there anything else that helps sleep?
Loads of things help sleep. And
do they really?
Yeah.
I'm very sceptical.
Well, you know, exercise is the major one. I work with the Retirement Planning Council, and one of the things I'm talking to people about. No, but it's actually, you talk about the importance of getting fit and exercise, and you talk about what are the benefits of being fit, and they'll actually say, well, you know, God, you know, you sleep really well. And it's like, exactly, like that lovely deep sleep you used to get when you were a kid because you were running around all day. But from a nutrition point of view, the magnesium is very helpful. Really interesting studies on kiwi fruit. To eating two kiwis fruit an hour before you go to bed gets you to fall asleep faster and less likely to wake up during the night. So, and I, you know, when I saw this about 15 years ago, I did roll my eyes and go, oh, here's another thing. But we're 15 years into research on it. It really does work. Interestingly, milk and bananas are quite good as well. But also having a routine and going to bed a little bit earlier than you think, 9:30, 10:00.
And I had two kiwi fruit.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on eating the skin of the kiwi fruit?
Personally, I hate it, but it's totally fine if people like it. So there's no issue.
It strikes me as it's probably good for you in some way.
Oh, it's probably got loads. It's got loads of extra fibre and stuff in there. You know, plus we're reducing food waste if you eat it. So if I'm going to eat it, if I've sliced up a kiwi, I'll do it that way. But the whole idea of just biting into it, no, it creeps me out. The furry bit on the outside, yeah.
Yeah, it has that slight kind of, you know, when you bite tinfoil, it has that kind of, oh, there you go, that tingle down the back of the neck thing. A text asking about the, of course, during the week, a lot of discussion around the school meals coming in and where you stand on this. I recall where you stand on this because you were saying the last time that you were here, the time before last, this is a very good thing.
It's a really, really good thing. And I think a lot of us are kind of brokenhearted about the relentless negative kind of coverage that it's actually been getting. Because the problem is when you keep hearing nothing but bad stuff about it, even though it's actually very, very good, parents get nervous about it. Then they don't sign up to it. Then the school doesn't have enough people to sign up to it. And then the hungry kids going to the school miss out on getting the meals. So, you know, it's a brand new program. There's definitely going to be teething issues with it. But the nutrition is there. There've been guidelines. There's a dietitian now reviewing all of the school meals at the moment. Going to have a report out about that.
Because some of them, when you read what they give, you think, well, I was led to believe that that was bad for you. I mean, I'm seeing chicken nuggets and pizza and stuff.
But the thing about it is you can have chicken nuggets that are mechanically recovered chicken and full of fat, and you can have ones that are actually whole chicken breast cut into slices with a dusting of breadcrumb, which is the same that you would do at home. You know what I mean? And kids have to actually like and eat the food as well. You know, we have to get a sort of a bit of a common denominator, and we have to have things like plain rice and pasta because some kids really are very fussy, and we can't just say to them, well, sorry, you're fussy and you can't have anything to eat. You know, I think we all need to calm down a little bit. We're not going to be able to give every single child the same home cooked dinner you personally make for your child every night. But I think if we keep pulling out the scheme, the hungry kids, and there's more of them people really realise, those hungry kids are missing foods. In every school, and even in areas that are considered affluent, you have children going to school with no breakfast, wouldn't have had a dinner the night before. And if we're going to level the playing field for education for children, they need to get food to be able to study and learn. And we have got to just embrace this. Yes, it will develop and grow, which is fantastic, but we have got to stop criticising the life out of it.
Tech saying, what vitamins or supplements can I take for thinning hair? 50-year-old female recently discovered I'm low on iron.
Okay, so low iron straight away is going to thin your hair. So you really need good high iron for hair. So if you're low in iron, first of all, find out why. Is it that you're just not eating it or are you malabsorbing it? Because you've got to kind of track that down a little bit. But yeah, low iron will definitely cause hair loss.
Then get a cast iron pan.
that actually helps if you can, if you'll cook in it. It really does. I have my grandmother's one that I still use.
Very jealous.
But, I know, weighs a ton though. But that actually helps, but actually you need to eat. But it's getting iron foods in, so red meat, black pudding, but also spinach or kale would be really good. Beans, lentils, they're all really good foods. But if you actually have low iron, you need to be on an iron supplement for 6 months. Before you stop, you get a blood test to make sure your iron came up. And then 6 months later, you check to make sure it stayed up. But other things for hair, make sure you're eating enough protein. It's a remarkable cause of hair loss because your hair is 99% protein. And get enough fat in. Now, don't go for a mad high fat diet, but if you're on quite a low fat diet, your hair needs fat actually to be healthy. So it's actually across the board healthy diet, general multivitamin, and if you are low on iron, an iron supplement.
Where do you stand on things that are fortified? Because a lot of milks, for instance, have iron added to them, as do cereals. Is that an easy way out, or is that fine if you need the iron?
They're brilliant. They're absolutely brilliant to go for. So cereals with iron in them are the major source of iron in the diets of children in this country. We have a huge issue getting iron into kids, and actually your fortified breakfast cereals are fabulous. And I'd love to see more fortification. I'd love to see folic acid in flour. I think that would be really important. All the knowledge that we have about folic acid, we're still not seeing the reduction in spina bifida because people don't take it early enough to actually be of benefit. And we really need to get moving and start getting the folic acid into
flour. So they're taking it when pregnant rather than several months?
Or forgetting about it altogether. 50% of pregnancies in Ireland are still unplanned. So you haven't had your 3 months of folic acid at that stage. So, you know, the reality is it needs to be just fortified.
It's good to know we're still a romantic nation. Sarah, thank you very much. That is Sarah Keogh, who is, of course, dietitian and founder of Eat Well.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS. That's KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.